The Energy and Climate Finance and Policy Division is called to order. Morning, everybody. Before we begin, I would like to welcome our newest member of the House, Representative Nelson, if we could all give him a round of applause. So we have a full agenda today, so we will get right into it. Representative Wagenius, would you like to move House File 1833?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 1833 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And we have a DE amendment.
Representative Wagenius moves House File 1833 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And with your DE amendment, would you like to move your amendment?
The DE one is our delete all amendment, and I would just like to move that.
So the DE one amendment is to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Is there any discussion on the DE one amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No.
The DE one amendment is adopted.
We also have an author's amendment coded A20, and this is basically refining some of the language here in the bill with one a big exception, and my apologies to Representative Richardson. I did not know that an agreement had been made on her bill, and so the agreed-upon language is in this amendment. One of the other things you will see in the amendment is that we have extended or we set times for which some of the money could be spent from the RDF fund, that some of the money, say for schools, would take more than, okay. I'll do this if you guys do the same thing back, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So that's the amendment, and I believe I also want to take out some language in the amendment that was not drafted just correctly, and that language would be on lines 3.30 to 3.22, and as an oral amendment, I just want to take that out of this amendment.
So we have the author's amendment A20 before us. The oral amendment is to remove lines 3.20 to 3.22. Discussion on the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The oral amendment is agreed to. Discussion on the A20 author's amendment. Representative Swazinski.
Sorry, we're just moving a little quicker. Tough to hear in this room a little bit. Why are we not? This is a question of the author. Why? Obviously, it's already been adopted, but why would we not have them pay for that?
It's actually what I wanted was actually for that to happen, but the language was not drafted correctly. We had agreed when we were talking here about parks and trails money and the money for park and rides to make sure that people did pay, but the language doesn't work as I intended. So at some time, and I didn't pick it up until late, so sometime we can bring it back because it is my intention that folks who are in park and rides and folks who are in parks do pay, so there will be credit card pays. Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. Since that was already adopted, I just do have a couple other questions. Is this a proper time for that, Mr. Chair?
Yes, the question is Leah 20.
Thank you.
Now's the time.
Yes. Just looking at page 4, section 60. Yes, just the Energy Utility Diversity Stakeholder Group Report, that part. Was this introduced as a bill, or kind of what's that section there?
Chair Wagenius.
Page 4, section.
Section 60 piece there.
Representative Swazinski.
Yeah. Which is.
What line are you looking on?
Well, that'd be 4.1.
Oh.
Chair Wagenius.
This is the was Representative Richardson's bill, and this is where I apologized, because when we had her hearing, she said it was a work in progress. And I did not know that work had been completed, and that work had been completed, and this is agreed upon language.
Additional discussion? Representative Swazinski.
Looking at page 3.8, 3.15, that section.
What line?
Yeah, how does that, if maybe nonpartisan staff could talk a little bit about that, or how that would potentially move forward, or how that would operate?
Question for Mr. Eliff on 3.8 through 3.15.
I just didn't hear the line you were giving me.
Oh, sorry.
You're not using, you told me.
So, you know what? Yes, I deserve that, Madam Chair, yes. Yes, 3.8 to 3.15. And, you know, how will this work? Explain kind of that math portion to it, and that could be nonpartisan staff or whomever, but is that better?
Yes.
All right.
Council will answer that.
Thank you.
Mr. Eliff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, yes, this is language that is to be inserted into the sections of the bill dealing with the IRP process. And it's basically outlining what considerations the public utility should make with respect to the environmental costs that they adopted, how that should be brought into the decision-making when looking at new energy facilities, non-renewable energy facilities, or purchases from non-renewable energy facilities.
Further questions on the bill? Representative Swazinski?
Not right now.
Okay. Further discussion? Madam Chair, I would also like to offer an oral amendment to your author's amendment. There was an intent, I believe, to modify two amounts under the renewable development account appropriations that didn't make it into the author's amendment, and that was pulling up the DE, reducing the amount on line 75.21 to $5 million regarding Metropolitan Council buses, and increasing the electric vehicle rebates to $6.9 million. I need to get the line up. Representative Swazinski.
And just in general, this A2, would this be considered an amendment to an amendment? This portion?
I'm offering... Yes, I'm offering an oral amendment to the A20.
A20? Sorry.
If I could,
Madam Chair.
That was the author's intent, and it was a misdraft. So I had submitted the exact numbers, and sometimes, because this is a complex bill with
yes.
complex language, that didn't get in, but that was my intent.
Okay. All right, Madam Chair.
So I'll so the amendment, oral amendment, would be to in the appropriation sections for the renewable development account to modify the appropriation for Metropolitan Council buses on 7.21 from 8.8 million to 5 million, and then modify the electric vehicle rebates on line 76.21 from 3.1 million to 6.9 million. Madam Chair, is that acceptable to you? Any further discussion on the oral amendment? All those in favor of the oral amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The oral amendment carries. Any further discussion on the A20? Seeing none, all in favor of the A20 amendment, say aye.
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 Any opposed? A20 is adopted. Next, we have the A1 amendment. So the A1 amendment being offered.
Mr. Chair, I have we've made some changes which have now become A35, so we'll drop A1.
All right, Representative Bowe, A1 is withdrawn. The A2 amendment, Representative Stevenson, I believe that is your amendment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and I would move the A2 amendment. Mr. Chair, the A2 amendment does a couple of things. It gets us a little bit more flesh on the bones on the scope of the transmission study. It gives us a specific target for the study to look at, in addition to the more broad questions that the study language asks for. And secondly, it provides some funding out of the RDA to make the study happen.
Is there discussion on the A2 amendment?
If I could.
Madam Chair.
I would ask members to vote yes. We did include that money in our accounting.
Seeing no further discussion on the A2 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. The A3 amendment, is that being offered?
Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment for House File 1833.
The A3 amendment is moved.
Speak
your amendment.
Thank you. This is pretty straightforward. This kind of surrounds a lot of the conversations that we've had in the past, talking about use of funds within the department. And we've asked, repeatedly how much from the department was potentially going to be costing. I have not yet received this. And as of now, I'm not sure, unless news has changed, the potential for the governor's office and the Department of Commerce to continue to pursue litigation against another government agency, both appointed and both democratically run, to sue one another, essentially. So this would just prohibit the use of probative money for pursuing a lawsuit, Public Utilities Commission regarding Enbridge Line 3. This would be, the process has been through, and this would be essentially let it go amendment. So, thank you.
Chair Wagenius.
Yes, I'm going to ask members to vote no on this amendment. First of all, we're not funding commerce in this bill. That's next week. But more importantly, this whole Enbridge question is going through a normal process. And it should continue to go through the normal process. So I'd ask members to vote no.
Further discussion to the A3 amendment? Representative Swazinski?
Yes, and just, we'd like to, obviously this is not necessarily funding, but this would be an okay place to put this into a bill. But, if you would entertain it for next week's conversation, I'd certainly like to work with you on that. I think we all want to protect the public's interest and public dollars, and would look forward to working with you on that. I would ask you to vote yes on this amendment. So,
seeing no further discussion on the A3 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Is there an A4 amendment being offered?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A4 amendment.
Representative Bowe moves the A4 amendment. Representative, would you like to speak to your amendment?
It's an effort just to minimize cost increases, to minimize the impacts for consumers by saying that the resource plans should not cause a rate increase above the rate of inflation.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also would like to speak in support of the A4. I think we've heard over and over and over again on how this will potentially save ratepayers money, or at least lessen the cost of energy within the state. And I think it's exceptionally important that if we're making a policy decision as far-reaching as this has the potential to do, that we'll actually write that. And this is not a freeze. This is not realizing that, we will not see it increase. But this will, in order for anything to move forward, it would have to be a very reasonable. And, tying it to an inflation, we do that with a lot of things. We hear that in a lot of different areas of state government, that we need to be able to keep up with the cost of inflation and try to limit that to that, so not seeing increases beyond that. I think it's a very positive thing for our constituents and our districts that if this is to move forward, very simply, that it will not see a dramatic rise for rates, and I think everyone should agree to that. So thank you.
Chair Wagenius.
Members, I'd ask you to vote no on this. The PUC already has very broad authority to manage for costs, and you will see that throughout the bill. And so this language is not needed, and I would ask you to vote no.
Representative Swasinski.
And I'd like to offer, ask for a roll call on that, if we could. Thank you.
A roll call has been requested. Is there further discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wagenius?
No.
Representative Swasinski?
Aye.
Representative Akam?
No.
Representative Baker? Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Bow?
Yes.
Representative Christensen? Representative Garofalo? Representative Halverson?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Mecklen?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
The vote being 4 in favor and 9 opposed, the amendment is not adopted. Is the A6 amendment being offered?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Sosinski? I'll offer the A6 said before the committee. Just kind of, you know, we talked a lot about community solar, about, you know, communities coming together. We had some of the testifiers talking about how they appreciate being able to see the wind towers and being able to see the solar panels and the warmth that that gives to their hearts. And I think this kind of just kind of, you know, with the cost of transmission being exceptionally expensive and what that could potentially mean to ratepayers, this really just brings, you know, the generation closer into a lot of the load. And so, you know, essentially what that this amendment does is just limit some of the expansion of the carbon-free resources really really close to the load so that we can save on transmission costs throughout the state, and then also really keeps it within the contiguous county subject matter. And I think this makes a lot of sense. So we'd appreciate your support.
Since this refers to an underlying bill that I've authored, I'll like to speak in opposition to it. I appreciate wanting to have these resources be visible, but I think Greater Minnesota deserves some job opportunities, too, to have renewable energy development. Is there further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none. Oh, Chair Wagenius.
The chair will vote no on this and ask members to vote no.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A6, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No?
No.
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 The amendment is not adopted. Is the A7 amendment being offered?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like
Senator
to
Mecklen.
Offer the A7 amendment that the technology would be to insert that it's composed entirely of components manufactured, mined, or produced in the United States.
Is there discussion on the amendment? Chair Wagenius.
What this amendment is doing is changing a definition in the Solar for Schools bill, and it changes specifically the definition of storage. So it is setting up roadblocks for storage and for solar on schools, and I would ask members to vote no.
Further discussion on the A7 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A7 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no.
No.
No. No. The amendment is not adopted. The A8 amendment being offered, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, again, we had a lot of conversations about the community solar garden program, and we had a number of solar developers and owners that kind of came to the table. One of the things we didn't dive into a whole lot was a number that I learned about after doing a little bit more research after our hearings that showed how much of our hard work and honestly high prices in Minnesota that we are paying to have this solar community garden program up and running, and now we want to expand it, which I have a lot of concern about, but how much of it is going to out-of-state companies that own this stuff. And so as our ratepayers continue to pay more for this, you know, again, value of solar that we identified was kind of a new thing that we are recognizing, this is something that we need to at least understand that we have a lot of companies out of our state that are profiting from our ratepayers without a care, a lick in the world about
that at all. And I'm concerned about that, and I just wanted to throw an amendment out there, have a conversation with our members here, that would prohibit solar garden ownership by out of state companies. If we want to do this, some of our companies locally were doing a great job. Some of the small co-ops, I don't have their names in front of me, but we had some folks doing some good things, and I think it was St. Charles or in greater Minnesota. They're doing some good things, and I think that is where it was intended to be. But 89% of the power credits are going to out-of-state companies. I don't know that anybody knew that. 89%. Now, that I fell off my chair when I saw that and I did that research. So I'm just asking the chair to consider, if we move this thing along and want to triple the size of our solar gardens, at least let's try to keep some of the profits staying in Minnesota. And if the author would amend this. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd offer that amendment, A8.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Since this speaks to my underlying bill, I'll speak to it as well. I oppose the amendment. Many Minnesotans work for companies that don't happen to be headquartered here, and they create good Minnesota jobs, so I think this would hurt the Minnesota jobs that out-of-state companies are bringing here.
Mr. Chair, if I just follow up then. So what do you think we should do in the future? I mean, are you happy with 89% outside of Minnesota? Let's just talk about the realistic part of how do we then want to – is there a way to pivot that a little bit? Is there a way to try to do more of that internally? I'm looking for some advice here because it is your bill. Did you know that 89% of the companies were actually getting the real profits from the developments? I mean, did you know that, Mr. Chair?
Representative Baker, I don't believe that statistic's accurate. I'd be happy to get some more information. You've said 89% of the companies, and you've also said 89% of the dollars. Which are you referring to?
Well, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is I was visiting with a member of the XL. Maybe we could call Rick Evans to the table if you want to have that, our expert, if I could get a phone a friend. He could probably be more specific on that.
We're not taking public testimony at this point. We're in amendment process, but, you know, I think we're happy to get information before the committee.
So, again, it's 89%, I believe, of the profits that are getting the credits. Again, it's hard to follow. And so it's a lot. It's far more than 50%. I think it's a reasonable ask, and I'm disappointed that you wouldn't allow that to go on. I think it's a good request. So,
Representative Swazinski,
appreciate your support.
Yes, you know, I think, you know, just being that we did have some separation, Mr. Chair, you know, we're offering amendments. It's been Tuesday, I think, we heard from a lot of the testifiers, and, you know, I would just that I think we could have people come up to speak to some of these amendments if we have some of those conversations. I mean, that's what this is what about, good, robust debate. And we had folks that maybe we thought that came before the committee yesterday, or 2 days ago or the day before to talk about it. And I would just simply appeal to the ruling of the chair, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Swazinski, there wasn't a motion that I'm aware of before the body to have testified. I don't believe I made a ruling. I just stated that our current status right now is that we're not taking public testimony. We took public testimony on Tuesday.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I mean, then I would ask that we not take public testimony, but we allow to ask members of the body questions.
Representative Swazinski, you're talking about members of the current group up here?
Anyone that's in this room.
Anyone who's in the room. Representative Swazinski, that sounds a lot like public testimony to me. We've had public testimony on all of the bills that are underlying this provision, many hours of public testimony. We had public testimony on Tuesday for many hours. Chair Wagenius, would you care to add anything?
Well, members, it's really up to the membership on this one. If they feel they need more information, it's fine with me. But this is.
If I could, Mr. Chair,
I would not want to make this a habit.
Thank you, and I respect your caution. I respect that. I think in this case, if we are trying to get the expert to make sure, if I made a mistake in my statements. I think it's good. This isn't public testimony. This is really phoning a friend. This is not people lining up. And this is something that if I needed a clarifying issue, this is might be. So if it's all right, I can ask the question. This is not what I would consider public testimony. And I'm not trying to drag anything out.
Chair Wagenius.
Well, it is public testimony, so let's not pretend it's not public testimony. It would be public testimony, and one of the things I'm thinking about here is how we noticed this hearing and what we noticed we said to the public, because if somebody wanted to testify against this, they probably don't know. So I am rethinking, just because I'm thinking about what notice we gave to the public. And that's, I know our staff has been extremely cautious about making sure that public knows that we will go this evening and we will go tomorrow. But as far as I know, we did not, nobody signed up to testify, and that was, that's been in all of our notices, and I've been, watched that carefully, and there's been that in every notice. So I'm now thinking that we would not have the opportunity for someone to come in on the other side and say no. And that's where some unfairness comes in. So I think this needs to be a discussion among members. And though I appreciate what you're asking for.
Thank you, Chair Wiggins.
It's just one of those balancing things.
Sure.
And
thank you, Chair Wiggins.
The balance needs to be with the public and all of what we do.
I'll point out as well that we did have Rick Evans in front of the committee for at least half an hour on Tuesday. We, in our notice, said that if you wish to testify for today, you could contact Mike Molzan. Nobody contacted Mike Molzan signing up to testify.
And just speaking to the agenda, Mr. Chair, it does have a portion in it in Section 3 of the agenda speaking to public testimony.
And that's, Representative Swazinski, that's what I just spoke to. We didn't have anybody contact Mike Molzan ahead of time to sign up for public testimony.
So I think you don't have to sign up before you come in for public testimony. What if you don't have a phone or don't have email? What if there are letters in the mail today that they sent that they were going to do it?
It's been our practice, Representative Swazinski, to ask people to sign up, and that seems to have been working pretty well so far.
Sure.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I found it in my notes here. So just what I was trying to do is just get to the right facts. The fact is 89% of our megawatts are owned by outside companies that are not residing here in Minnesota. I just think it's an important fact that the megawatts that we're growing are largely owned by companies not in Minnesota. Thank you. I just want to make sure it's for the record.
Representative Swazinski.
Then I guess we'll kind of try to backfill a little bit to folks that maybe didn't hear some of the testimony from some of our testifiers on Tuesday evening. And, you know, some of the things we did hear, and I'm speaking to this amendment specifically, was that a vast majority of projects that are owned are being resold, and they're being sold to big, as it was quote-unquote, big East Coast utilities, folks in Canada. And I've even heard reports that, like, Warren Buffett owns a vast majority of these now. So, you know, if that's our goal, I mean, obviously Omaha and Nebraska are going through a lot of issues with flooding and the rest, but, you know, if we want to sell our economic opportunity with overpriced solar to Warren Buffett, I mean, that's our prerogative. But at the end of the day, I think this amendment would help make sure folks that are wanting to keep community solar within the community and now expand it to non-contiguous counties, this would just be saying we just keep it within the state. So, and I would ask for your support.
Further discussion to the A8 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A8 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. The A9 amendment is that being offered. Representative Bowe.
Mr. Chair, the A9 is also tied to the new A35, so I will not go forward with A9.
A9 amendment is withdrawn.
Thank you,
Representative Bowe. Is the A10 amendment being offered? Representative Beckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A10 amendment, which speaks to the power plant transition, community transmission planning. I think this was in Representative Stevenson's House File 1405. So for those of us that host these communities, we have something in place to work with the workers, the community, the tax base. It's all being shifted away.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you are correct. This was in the bill that I authored, and I think it's a good amendment, and I would support it.
Chair Wagenius.
Yes, I also think it's a good idea, and I would urge members to support it.
Further discussion on the A10 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. The A11 amendment, is that being offered? Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much. I want to revisit a bill that I was actually really grateful to have a hearing this year, Madam Chair, regarding the biomass plant in Benson. This was something that is near and dear to our area. The community of Benson really bent over backwards to get this ready to go, and the city of Benson was made right last year with the renewable development account that helped their city get their investments back when this plant, which is now closed from producing energy, it's closed now. The plant is being stripped and dismantled as we speak. But who was really hurt yet were the suppliers and vendors that were producing and bringing wood chips and turkey litter to produce this power when they really didn't want to be a part of this from day one, when Xcel Energy had to make an agreement with something and the city of Benson agreed to go along with this. So we had companies and farmers and fertilizer plants open up because they just wanted to make this thing work. And because of the action of the legislature, we closed that plant down 10 years sooner than it should have. We have a lot of people hurting out there that are going out of business, trucking firms that bought specialty trucks to move these type of things to the plant. It really hurt a lot of our folks. And I guess what I'm doing with this amendment, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, is that I was just asking to take some of the higher ed transition renewable monies. You have two bills in front of us. I think it was maybe one bill, $6 million each going to the U of M and $6 million going to Minnesota State. Those might be really good projects. I just know $6 million is an awful lot of money to come from the RDA. I think asking $1 million apiece from those to just trim that down, just to help our neighbors out there to show that we're trying to do something, it's better than what we're going to get. And with that, Mr. Chair, I hope that we can look at these folks in outstate Minnesota that literally are looking for something. This $2 million is almost an embarrassment if this is all we can do, because it's not enough. We're trying to find in upwards of $30 to $40 million from them, because that's what their losses, and then they're much more than that. So to members, this is just I think a very small offering that we can try to trim a little here, trim a little there, help some people here. Same account, doesn't really change the dynamics of our chair's final budget, but I'm wondering if you would consider the A11 as a friendly amendment to help our friends out in greater Minnesota for this little bit of trimming for this transitional to the university system in the Minnesota State. Thank you.
Discussion on the A11. Chair Wagenius.
First of all, it is not appropriate to use renewable development fund to give money to people who took normal business risks in a market economy, and to reimburse them for the risk they took. That's not how our market economy works. Moreover, you're taking money from our university system and our state college system for renewable energy, which is a totally appropriate use of the money. So I would ask members to vote no.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to that point, Madam Chair, I think it's very appropriate that, because shutting down the plant saved Xcel ratepayers hundreds of millions of dollars, and that is funds from ratepayers that goes into the RDA account through their complex process on their rate bills. The RDA fund helped develop and design this whole idea with biomass, and I think it's a very appropriate place. It's something that I think is more than fair, and I think that we saved, and the reason it was a hard bill for us to kind of work through, it literally saved ratepayers hundreds of millions of dollars in excess costs, because we realized the high price of biomass. So I think it's, I just wanted to say on the record that this was a very reasonable request, and I would appreciate a yes vote.
Further discussion, Lee, A11. Seeing none, all those,
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Baker, having sat through all the hearings last year and the year before on the Benson plant, I think Benson got $30 million for a plant that was going to close no matter what. So they actually had the city of Benson got a windfall. Why doesn't the city of Benson put up that $2 million or the $4 million to, if they want to subsidize a normal business process? They had no plan to speak of for their $30 million other than they were going to put it in the bank and maybe do a cheese factory at some point in the future. So there's a source of money out there for these businesses that are going to see some pain from that, but certainly doesn't need to come out of XL ratepayers' pockets.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Mahoney, well, it was $20 million that went out to Benson. It barely covered their costs and their lost investments with their discounts and their ratepayers and with their land costs and things. But also, it came out of the RDA account, and I think we all supported that. I think most of us thought that was the right thing to do because the RDA is what it was designed to do. So Benson is made whole, but we didn't have the time because of the timing of it when it came up. We didn't have time to bring in the other vendors. It was a longer process. And so, again, I think because they were paid out of that same account, this would be a legitimate reason to ask for this small amount to come out of that same account as well.
Mr. Chair, we could go a little farther on this, but as I remember, the Laurentian plant up in the Iron Range had enough time to figure out how to take care of their wood haulers and other particular people. Just because Benson didn't doesn't mean that we need to come back and take more money out of XL ratepayers' pocket.
And to that, Mr. Chair,
Senator Baker.
Again, Laurentian is still open. They're still processing. They're still moving wood chips, as far as I know. We are not in Benson. So we didn't have the time because of the window of opportunity to shut that plant down was really accelerated by the owners and by XL Energy. So they were also covered by the RDA. I just think it's, again, we were using that fund before. It's reasonable to ask for it again. That's why I think this amendment makes sense.
Chair Wiginius.
I just want to note for the record that we are going astray of one of the fundamental issues here, and that is do we reimburse businesses for doing normal business activities, taking a risk, or maybe not taking a risk for a sure thing, because I've heard the Benson thing called a sure thing, and that's why we ought to reimburse them. But that's, we're a capitalist society. We're not a socialist society. And so I would ask members to vote no.
To that, Mr.
Representative Baker, a final comment.
I just want to make sure the record is straight, though. You're right. This is, we all are risk takers when we're in business. Here's the difference with this one. This was meant to be a solid 20-year deal. There were cancellation agreements that were in place before, but the last couple of years, those were slowly getting eroded away. And those, then they because everybody knew there was a 20-year plan. There was an agreement with the state of Minnesota that was a 20-year deal. And if we were talking about year 20 or 19 even, I wouldn't be wasting our time. This was cut in half with lots of investments and personal guarantees. Families and businesses were ruined because of this, because the Minnesota state decided to cut it short by 10 years, by half. And again, it was a bad idea from the beginning, but we have to own our part of it. And I think, again, I just want to make sure that we all knew the risks going into it. And but again, knowing that the state of Minnesota could have possibly pulled this agreement out before 20 years, you wouldn't have had a partner to the table at the beginning. We would never have come to the table. So I want to make sure that their integrity is held up, because they did what they were asked to do. And it was a 20-year plan. If you had performed your job and if you did your thing, I mean, if these companies didn't get the wood haulers and didn't get the wood delivered on time or the turkey litter, they're going to go find somebody else. You're out. That's how that works. But if the plant is still open, at least then somebody's going to provide that. But at this point, we just shut it down too early. So thank you.
All those in favor of the A11 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
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 The amendment is not adopted. Is the A12 amendment being offered?
Thank you. I'd like to offer the A12. I move the A12 amendment.
Representative Swazinski moves the A12 amendment.
And so we've talked, part of the conversations is talking about off-ramps, essentially saying, you know, we don't have to worry about these increased costs because there are off-ramps that utilities can potentially petition the PUC to have a delay if the technology is not there or whatnot. And, you know, I asked many times to each of the utilities whether or not they had actually petitioned at any given time for increased rates or any of those things from the PUC. Answer is no. And often the reason is they're not necessarily the ones paying the increased costs. It's the customers. It's the individual families and business owners. It's the small mom-and-pop shops across the state that are feeling the brunt of some of these advocacy programs, government-run. And would like to offer that amendment that would allow individuals or businesses that are affected negatively or positively by these policy decisions to be able to petition the PUC on an individual level so that, you know, we have a very mining intensive state. We have a lot of different businesses across the state that are very unique and sometimes exceptionally energy intensive in their production. And I think it's important that this committee keeps in mind the fact that, you know, just because the utility may not feel the brunt of that, but our individual businesses and families do. And I think that they should be allowed to petition and to help, you know, widen the road a little bit between the guardrails of who can petition for these off-ramps in this bill. And I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. Since this is speaking to a bill that I have authored, I'll like to speak to it. I oppose the amendment. I believe that asking anybody to be able to appeal to modify the standard would be unworkable and would greatly burden the Public Utilities Commission. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this morning I had in my office a company that they recycle old cars. And I think they were in your office as well some time ago, Representative Long, about how much energy they use to literally electrify, and they melt these car frames, and they use them, and they recycle them for re-rod and all kinds of different good purposes. And they have two plants in the United States, one here in Minnesota and one down in Texas. And what they were able to show me really frightened me, and I forgot to bring the graph. But what they're showing us is over the last 10, 12, 15 years in Minnesota, our rates were right along there where it was still advantageous for them to do business in Minnesota. And when the recession hit in 08, 09, when natural gas all of a sudden got found and got cheap, they saw other states dropping in rates, and Minnesota didn't do that. And so what happened at that point is our rates crossed over, and Texas all of a sudden got cheaper. We stayed steady and actually kept going up, and they're still going down. All they were trying to recognize and bring to my attention was if we don't have the ability to sound off or to say, hold on, we have a problem here, Houston. We'd like to be able to bring up an issue. I think this actually is kind of to my point when I was asking Mr. Eloff about these questions a couple days ago. There should be a mechanism where people can, if they have hard facts, you know, the PUC doesn't want to be overwhelmed with just a bunch of dockets and a bunch of problems. I get that. But if a company or a customer or a utility company can bring their to the PUC some real reasons why they have some concerns, this would be, I think, a good reason to for this company. Again, they're big enough to really bring some real concerns about here's what's happening and here's why we want to change this. I like this amendment, Representative Swazinski, and I would support it. Again, this was an example that came to me this morning that I thought a perfect example of why we think this is a good idea. So thank you.
Further discussion to the A12. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. And I would just, you know, we could either take this, you know, I understand potential burdens to the PUC and what that could potentially mean. You know, they have 50-some-odd employees in their department. But in reality, you know, we need to allow there to be a particular voice. Like, the idea is that they could either come to the legislature. We are legislating this. So let's say none of these bills pass. The Green New Deal of Minnesota doesn't pass. You know, Xcel Energy has already made an internal commitment to potentially go along some of these lines and have a goal. And guess what? They can pursue that. But under this particular legislation, you're by creating a mandate as elected officials in this room, you know, you are saying that I have heard from businesses in my district. I've heard it over and over and over. I have heard from individuals in this my district. They want this. They feel that the world is going to burn in 10 years and we're all going to die. And we have young people having depression because of what we're feeding them. And so this would give individuals and businesses in your district the ability that if they are potentially negatively affected, if the proof is not in the pudding when it comes to reducing rates in our state, that they could have a voice in the PUC. Because guess what? Business is already knocking on my door saying my rates have gone up in the last 10 years because of Governor Pawlenty's 25% mandate. And so in other policies across the country. But, you know, this would give those people a voice at the PUC where it counts, because they can knock on my door, they can knock on your door, but once this is potentially passed, if this is in law, they have nothing. What are they going to do? They're going to come to you and say, hey, would you put a stop to it? You know, we've seen, you know, the disaster of Obamacare and what's that done to health care rates, and it's gone up and up and up when the promises it was going to go down, down, down. And I see the same type of promises being made in this legislation. What's going to happen? Well, you know, it's out of our hands. We can't do it. And I think, you know, having some sort of a semblance of relief, of a pressure point, of an off-ramp, which I think is important, by allowing individuals and businesses to petition the PUC is an excellent piece of you know, kind of a regulation, allowing some of that pressure to come off us and allow that utility and allow that individual and those businesses to be able to have a conversation with a policymaker. So I ask your support.
Further discussion on the A-12. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A-12 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Is the A-13 amendment being offered? Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A-13 amendment.
Representative Bowe moves the A-13.
The A-13 seeks to exempt rural electric cooperatives and municipal utilities from the carbon-free standard. I think that's important for a couple of reasons. Number one, these utilities were exempt from the solar power standard that was set in 2013. They're also not rate regulated by the PUC, and they are self-governing. And so they're a whole different entity than the larger utilities.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bowe, for bringing this one forward. I think, you know, remember, some of these amendments, we're having some fun, okay? I get that. We're trying to make this bill just a little bit better, but this one is really good. And I say that because, again, I don't want to sound like Glenn Grunhagen on this, but I sat on the Utility Commission for a few years. This is embarrassing. So anyway, all right. I'm trying not to do that anymore. I'm sorry. Strike that from the record, please.
Yeah.
But my point to this is, knowing what it's like to be a member-owned utility versus a public investor-owned utility is much different. Our member-owned communities, they run their companies, they set their rates, they are living and breathing in those communities, and not once did you ever hear a muni or a co-op say they could get to that goal of 100% renewal by 2050. Not once did we hear that from MMUA, MREA, or anybody else that supports the smallest utilities in the state of Minnesota. This would be probably, in my opinion, Representative Long, Chairman today, if this would be one that you could lighten the load a little bit, this is going to have the most negative effect if you don't carve these folks out, because they don't have the ability and the resources to start investing like other large public utilities do, to start investing in, okay, now what do we do? The ticker starts for them too. This would be a really reasonable one to say, we hear you, and maybe we can look at this in 5 years. Maybe there's a ramp up different for this group of utility owners that are out in greater Minnesota. They're the smallest ones. We have worked really hard in this committee over the years that I've been here to make sure they are hurt the least. Their rates are in line with everything else, but this will hurt them the most because they don't have the base to make up these investments they're going to have to make in some storage ideas or other ideas. So if this one, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, you would accept, this would make, it would go a long ways for me. So I think this is a really great amendment. I hope that members look at this group differently than you do the IOUs. Thank you. Representative Bill.
I would just like to request a roll call vote on this one, please.
Roll call has been requested.
Thank you.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I would just offer, you know, another point. I appreciate Representative Bowe and moving this forward, but, you know, I think something we need to keep in mind is, you know, these folks are elected. So when you go to the meeting, it's your friends, it's your neighbors, it's your business owners up the street. They sit on the boards of a rural electric co-op. I mean, they are responsive to the wants and the needs and the aspirations of their constituents. And so, yes, I'm sure there's places that they don't move, but they're making that move for the greater group of their investors and their local people that elected them. And I think if they set a personal goal, like Xcel is doing, to do this exact type of thing, if that individual utility does it and they vote on it and they are reelected, that they should be able to do it. And I think in that situation, we should allow that to happen. I'm not saying we ban it, but we're also saying that is it our job to take away local control? I mean, we hear that over and over and over. We want to empower school districts. We want to empower local communities to make a difference. We want to put our communities or our local counties on the best footing possible. So why would we do that with our rural electrics? Because they know what the policies are, they know what their rates are, they know what their portfolio of electric generation is across the state and across the region, and what their wants and their needs are the customers. Why don't you let those folks decide what their policy is going to be, rather than a top-down, quite frankly, a metro-centric debate? I mean, we talk about this rural divide and metro. Here's a great example, folks. If you want to make a One Minnesota, allow those folks to be self-independent, right? I mean, we don't need St. Paul deciding it, because I know where the votes are going to be on this. It's not going to be in rural Minnesota to demand that a rural co-op follow this. Ask for a roll call. Thank you for doing that.
So I'll speak to the amendment, since it speaks to a bill I've authored. The governor's goal, I think, in setting a 30-year target for all utilities in the state is to move the entire state forward on renewable energy. Most co-ops purchase through Great River Energy, which is doing some outstanding work on moving towards renewable energy. And I think we all have faith that with wind being the cheapest power right now and solar being the cheapest in 4 years, we can move affordably towards 100% renewable energy across the state. Is there further discussion on the A13 amendment? The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wagenius?
No.
Representative Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Akam?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye for the munis.
Representative Bierman? No. Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Halverson? Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mahoney? No. Representative Mecklen? Representative Stevenson?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye. Weinstein votes no.
Oh, sorry. Oh.
We still love you, Frank.
This is a vote no.
He skipped you on purpose.
The vote being 5 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is not adopted. The A13 amendment, excuse me, that was the A13. We're on the A14 amendment. Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the A14 amendment.
Representative Bowe moves the A14.
I believe that it protects the consumer, locking in guaranteed savings. So,
since this refers to a bill that I have authored as well, I speak to it. I oppose the amendment. We already have off-ramps for costs in the bill, so this is not needed. Further discussion on the A14 amendment? Representative Swazinski requests a roll call. Is there a further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wagenius?
No.
Representative Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Akam?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Halverson? Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Meckland?
Aye.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
There being five ayes and eight nays, the amendment is not adopted. It's the A15 amendment being offered. Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to offer the A15 amendment. This
Representative Meckland moves the A15.
Thank you. This language comes from Representative Christensen's House File 1919. It's a community energy transition grant for the purpose of the communities of energy transition within, where is it on here? Here we go. Yeah, for the eligible communities would be the county or municipality or tribal governments that host investor-owned electric generating power plant, coal, nuclear energy, natural gas.
Is there discussion? Chair Wagenius?
Yes. Thank you. We did adopt an amendment for transition planning, and I think that was a good idea. But it's premature to offer grants, particularly in this case when you are taking money from solar on schools, taking most of the money, and then have an ongoing funding from a renewable development account. So this is way premature, it is way costly, and it is harming our children. So I would ask members to vote no.
Further discussion, Representative Meckland?
Well, in the case of where in Becker, our plants are already scheduled to be closed, so it's the planning has kind of already been done in this regard. So there's got to be some kind of fallback to what's going to happen there.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no.
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 The amendment is not adopted. The A16 amendment, is that being offered? Representative Swazinski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A16.
Representative Swazinski moves the A16.
Yes, so essentially what this bill does, we heard from testimony over the last week that already even the most scantily prescribed solar gardens are already at 10% residential for these non-contiguous, or for solar gardens, and for just one of the reasons why we want to move this, we've heard a lot of times where it's a business buying 40, another business buying 40, and then kind of to finish it off, they'll get a few residentials. And we've heard that that's the most expensive place, and those are the most in need, whether it's low-income folks from a residential standpoint, whether it's families. And this really just kind of helps. I really focus where I think most of the testimony has come from. That, you know, if there's been any disgust, it's that businesses have been taking advantage of this and shifting their costs to residential customers. And what this bill would do is essentially move it from a 10% to 50% to the load for non-contiguous solar gardens for residential participation. So in order to get a solar garden in, essentially we would lock it in and really say we want to focus this on residents. We want to say make residential customers are going to make over 50% of the load so that they're not being taken advantage of the Warren Buffetts in this new Green Deal of a bill. So with that, I ask for your support.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I would support this amendment. I think as we I think all learned about this conversation, there was way more corporate and large company investments in this thing. Now we've learned it's 89% of the megawatts have been purchased by our out-of-state residents and companies and our folks that Representative Swedinsky has mentioned. But this, I think, is what means the word community in this project. If it's not owned at least by 50%, I think it should be 51%. But I think at least if the 50% ownership part of this was reasonable, I think this is a very good amendment. I think we heard in committee that to the some of the questions that I had asked the developers is it's the same cost. They can sign up more people. It's a good deal for residents. We've got some LIHEAP information in here if people want to get on it. We're actually making it easier for residents to get on. My concern is that if we don't allow more room to let them grow up into the more the 10% or up to 50, I think this is a great idea. We should make sure that we make a statement so that large companies don't just come and start grabbing 30-40% of these gardens that they can do now. We're not slowing it down. Even our former chair, Garofalo, had opened his cards. I had never heard that before, how he didn't want to bring it forward because it was really an advantage, but nobody was really pushing it. But now he's saying this is not the right way to do this. This is not the intent of the program. So I appreciate this, Representative Swedinski, and I'll support this amendment.
I'll speak to the amendment briefly since this is to my underlying bill. The community access project provision in the bill is tailored towards more residential and does have a 50% requirement, so I think that is the more appropriate place for this language. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and to the author of the bill, I was there when they put this community solar gardens together. They sold community solar gardens for residential customers. They didn't sell it for corporate. They didn't sell it for schools. They didn't sell it for cities. They sold it for residential. This is a way that residential customers could get in on solar. And it has been turned on its head. It is all corporate. It is all schools. It is all cities. I think this bill is this amendment. I'll be supporting this amendment because I am so frustrated when people come to the legislature and sell a program and then immediately turn it on its head. I don't think the residents had a chance in community solar garden from the start. I don't think people lied when they sold this program, but I think the design was wrong from the beginning, and we should have residents be able to participate rather than corporate. Just because it's a little bit more difficult to get residents engaged in community solar, you have to go to the door, you have to go sell this, rather than go to a big corporate entity, does not give them the right to turn what they sold to this legislature on its head. So I think this is a good amendment. I think it should be just the opposite of 89% should be residential.
Representative Swedinski.
You know, and I appreciate Representative Mahoney's. You know, I think, you know, this was sold as a community solar, and it's become a chamber solar garden program. And, you know, I think this bill, I think, you know, you mentioned a little bit of it.
Chamber of commerce business?
I'm not saying against chamber business. Anyway, it started with a C, so I went with that. No, but I think, you know, Representative Long, you did speak to the port that you're creating in your bill, you know, another section because the community solar program has essentially failed in its ability and willing, I should say, it's failed in its willingness to actually commute and actually go after residential customers. And your bill kind of creates three different programs. It keeps kind of the current one, a residentially focused one, and some different things. And quite frankly, it's unnecessary. What would do this, if I think it's necessary that you have a blanket statement that we want to drive it into the industry, that we're focusing this thing on residential as it was sold to the legislature, as Representative Mahoney spoke to it. And I think, I mean, this is just common sense. I think anyone in this room that has sat through any amount of testimony, we had a couple schools come forward here that said, you know, hey, we had some great success. And I think when you're having a business or a school that is passing their costs on to their consumer, you know, this is essentially another way for, you know, businesses don't, I mean, we talk about this over and over in tax committee. Businesses don't pay taxes. Corporations don't pay taxes. They are simply tax collectors. And so when policy adversely goes against business, they just pass that cost on. The tax incident studies say 90 to 95% of extra costs, of extra taxes that get put on the business, that get passed on our consumer. So essentially, it's a regressive tax. So any policy put on business, any tax you put on business is a regressive tax if the business is big enough. And so whether it's energy policy as well. So the current program with businesses buying into it, with schools buying into it, is essentially regressing because you're passing the cost on to other consumers, other residential. And by moving it to 50%, at least you give them a fair shot. And I think you can set a clear, concise goal for the folks that are developing these projects for Warren Buffett to go after residential customers, and I'd ask for your support. Thank you.
Further discussion?
And I'll ask for a roll call.
Roll call is requested. Roll call is requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wagenius?
No.
Representative Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Akam?
The chair voted no.
No. Sorry.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Behrman?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen? Representative Garofalo, Representative Halverson, Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mahoney?
Yes.
Representative Meckland?
Aye.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
There being six ayes and seven nays, the amendment is not adopted. Is the A-17 amendment being offered?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, members, this was a conversation we had with our community solar.
Baker moves the A-17.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through our conversation with community solar again, we talked a lot about making the price of the ever-growing part of the resource planning for Xcel Energy more aware to the PUC as they give thumbs up or thumbs down to Xcel when they set their next rate schedule. So by allowing more transparency with the developers and the rates and how they come up with their value of solar, how they structure their deals with the 89% of out-of-state owners, I think it's important for Minnesota ratepayers, if we want to grow and triple the size of this program, it's going to put more higher-priced solar energy on our grid. And I think we're all a lot more informed about how this program works over the last couple of weeks. With this involvement, Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that this is part of the plan to make it more apparent, more transparent to the PUC, that the owners of the community solar gardens must annually report to the Department of Commerce the amount of revenues received. I think it's an important component to what's driving that cost, and I think it's better information for the PUC to make better decisions. So with that, I do support this strongly, and I hope we get some green votes on this one. Thank you.
Since this is to a bill I've authored, I'll speak to it. I oppose the amendment. The Public Utilities Commission and Commerce have adequate ability to protect consumers, and so I don't believe it's necessary. Is there further discussion to the A-17? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. The A-18 amendment, is that being offered? Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move the A-18. Again, what this does is it just allows to revalue or look at the value of solar for the larger solar gardens that we're allowing on this bill. So again, moving this from 1 megawatt to 3 megawatts, we know that there's value and savings with the economies of scale. So as you do bigger gardens and do take up more land in one location, this should get cheaper for people. This bill, what it does is it just reduces the value of solar for larger gardens. And moving from 1 to 3 megawatts is a big deal. So the cost should drop for developers. You know, what's going to happen is they're going to sell a lot more larger chunks of it to larger companies. There's going to be a lot more there to buy. You know, we've turned down the favor to residential folks, and so these are going to get sucked up a lot quicker by bigger companies out of state. Why don't we just allow it to say, let's keep our rates as tight as we can, let's drop the rate of solar with larger gardens. And I think this is a really good idea for the ratepayers of Minnesota.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, I'd like to speak in favor of the A-18. I think, I think that's pretty common sense portion. I mean, that's what we heard as well. We need to lower costs. We need to whatever that might be, but yet the cost doesn't actually go down to the customer. So, you know, this is obviously, you know, moving anything that says community solar forward is choosing the most expensive option when it comes to solar. You know, it's almost four times the cost of current market rate solar. I mean, it doesn't make sense, folks. Like, four times the cost. And we're forcing it down, and we're going to say we need to increase the amount because it's not efficient enough. Well, we know what's most efficient, yet we don't want to do that. Which would be most beneficial to our customers and our constituents across the state. I think it just makes common sense, Representative Baker. I appreciate you offering it. So thank you. I'd ask for your support.
Since this is to a bill I've authored, I'll speak to it. I oppose the amendment. The Public Utilities Commission has spent significant time developing the value of solar rate, which is designed not to have cross-subsidization. This would actually go back to the applicable retail rate. It's unclear to me if this would even be a rate cut. It could be a rate increase. So I oppose it. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. The A-19 amendment, is that being offered? Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A-19 amendment. What this does, members, is it requires our legislative auditor to who just tapped his step in the room, by the way? That was not planned. Anyway, it requires our legislative auditor to actually take a dive into what does community solar gardens look like. I have been here for 5 years, getting into my fifth year. I've learned more about solar gardens and the price of utility solar than I ever have before. I have a lot more to learn. And I will tell you that anything that the legislative auditor puts his or her fingerprints on, I always learn a great deal amount of information. I think having our ratepayers, which in this case is at least 50% of the state of Minnesota, contributes to this program whether they like it or not. Having the legislative auditor break it out for us all to understand in very layman's terms, I think is really important to how the future of solar gardens look. Maybe we can find a way to continue to grow them, but I think it's a way that we need to make sure that we can communicate this complex process, this complex project out there in a way that I think is very fair to our citizens here in Minnesota. It's a very nonpartisan approach to this. It breaks things out. I just would really support this. I think if you say no to this, members, you're saying, no, I don't want to know about this. You're saying, I don't want to learn about this. I think that would be a bad move to just at least offer this new information we can put forward and ask the auditor to look at this when it can get on his schedule down the road. But I think it's a really important thing that we as members of this Energy Committee need to learn more about, and that's the right way to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Wagenius.
Yes, I'm a fan of legislative audits. But we have a process in this state for choosing audits. And I wish if this had been something that you wanted to do, you would have engaged in the process that we have. The way it's set up here, that to putting this audit in with the timelines, you're preempting some of the audits that are already in place, the ones that have been chosen by legislators in the whole process. So, members, I would ask you to vote no.
Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Baker for bringing this forward. I believe that solar is going to be an important part of our power and energy future, but I do have concerns about community solar and the whole program. It just, the costs seem to be so much more than other methods and means for solar energy, and so I like the thought of having that oversight and that transparency, so I would support this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Sosinski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I would too. You know, I think just having kind of a fresh set of eyes on this in the unique position that the legislative auditor is in and can take a look at it so that we can really be, we've heard a lot that we want to be making decisions on facts and data. And I think this just allows us to have a little bit more facts, a little bit more data to make policy decisions rather than fly by the seat of our pants and go with the flow. So I'd appreciate your support.
Seeing no further discussion, the A-19 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
The amendment is not adopted. The next amendment is the A-19-0310 amendment, which is my amendment, and I will move. It's the first amendment that was in the packets, if folks are going in order. So I will move the A19-0310 amendment. This amendment makes modifications to the low-income solar program under the bill. These were technical changes that were presented by the Department of Commerce. I would ask members support. Representative Swazinski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just can you explain how this works differently than what's currently there, or a little bit more in depth on your amendment?
Sure, Representative Swazinski, this is not intended to function differently. It's just a better way to frame it, and these were edits that were provided by the Department of Commerce to try to help improve the language.
Maybe Mr. Eloff could just speak to the changes of what are the differences, and
Mr. Eloff.
For us lay people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, this morning was the first time I saw this amendment. As you can see, it was prepared by the reviser while I was preparing the other 34 amendments we're hearing today, yesterday. Give me just a moment here.
Is there other discussion while Representative Eloff is, Mr. Eloff is reviewing? All right, then we'll.
Just, Mr. Chair, like, where did this come from? Who requested it? Some of that back. I mean,
I've said twice, Department of Commerce.
Department of Commerce
prepared this language for us as a technical amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, after a very quick review, one thing that appears in this amendment that was not in the DE1 is on lines 213 and 214 of the amendment. Limiting a grant awarded under this section to 60% of the total cost to develop the community solar garden. There was no language in the DE1 that spoke to what percentage of the money could be, or what percentage of the total cost could be covered by the financial assistance.
Mr. Chair, we're not taking public testimony. Would we be willing to take government testimony on this amendment? Would the Department of Commerce like to come up and just speak to why they even feel we need to have a percentage in there or not? Or
Representative Swazinski, I indicated that we were not planning to take public comment today. This amendment was posted in yesterday. The goal, as I've stated, is the same as the underlying provision that we heard testimony on. There were some technical changes to the underlying language that Mr. Eloff spoke to.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I amend my testimony slightly? Getting another look at the DE1, I noticed that on lines 13, 22, and 23 of the DE1, the grant cap there is 95% of the total costs. So still different, but there was a cap in the DE1.
So,
Representative Swazinski.
My understanding, I've been shuffling papers all over here. So line 13, so it would be essentially dropping it from 95% to 60%?
Mr. Eloff.
That's correct.
Okay. Was there, I mean, this is not my amendment, so I obviously didn't have Department of Commerce didn't talk to me about this either, but just trying to, for the sake of the public's sake, like, did folks from Crow Wing County ask for this, or, like, I mean, that's a big reduction in percentage in reimbursement. I imagine, like, is there peace in the valley with an agreement there, or, like, I don't know. Like, is anyone here? Joe Sullivan, or?
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I kind of see what you're doing here, but my bigger concern is the limitation, not so much on the percentage, but is there a dollar figure up to how much can be spent on this program? Well, I mean, is it open-ended, or are we talking up to the whole program is going to cost $1 million or $10 million or $100 million? Because I've not seen it in the DE1, and I don't see it here. And I know there was a particular program that we didn't have a limitation on a couple of years back that kind of got out of hand.
Mr. Elick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, in the DE1 on page 76, lines 5 through 10 have appropriations for this program, $1 million in fiscal year 20 and $1 million in fiscal year 21.
Okay.
There are no changes in the amendment regarding those figures.
Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Swazinski.
So, Mr. Chair, so my understanding is that then, so rather than 95% of $1 million, it would be 60% of $1 million, so 600,000? Is that the correct assumption there when you're talking about a cap?
Mr. Elif?
Mr. Chair, Representative Swazinski, no, the $1 million appropriation would stay the same. What would change would be individual grants to individual solar gardens that applied under this section.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, Mr. Chair, but so individual grants under this section, is there a limit? I think Representative Mahoney spoke to that. Is it, is there a limit? So it can a single grant be up to, so let's say the grant project would be, or the whole project would be, well, if it's 60%, let's say $1,400,000, would that equal the 60% so they could apply for the whole $1 million? Is there any limitation on the?
So Representative Swazinski, I think there's a confusion about what the percentage is of. This is a percentage of the total cost to develop the community solar garden. So rather than it being 95% of the cost to develop that garden, that it's being reduced to 60%. So there's a lower match for individual projects under this bill.
Yes, but that's what I said. I mean, I spoke to the fact, Mr. Chair. So let's say the total project was $1.5 million, they would be able to apply for the entire $1 million. So there's not a limitation.
Representative Swazinski, no, they would only be able to apply to 60% of the total cost rather than 95%, which was under the previous bill.
Okay, so there's no limit on the amount of the million that they can touch. Okay.
There's a limit in terms of the amount of grants that are available, as Mr. Elif spoke to.
Yeah, that's what my question
is. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A19-0310 amendment, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The amendment carries. Members, we do not have time to get to additional amendments. We have another committee coming in. We will be recessing and reconvening 15 minutes after session in State Capitol 120 to continue marking up House File 1833. And with that, we are in recess. The Energy and Climate Finance and Policy Division is reconvening. Representative Hornstein, would you like to move the minutes from March 19th and March 20th?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the previous minutes.
Thank you, Mr.
Today.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We move the
from Tuesday.
Minutes from March 26th. All in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are adopted. We are on the A21 amendment. Is there an author for the A21 amendment? Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A21 amendment, which would remove the restriction. I believe is the I don't have my glasses on. To allow new nuclear power.
Representative Mecklen moves the A21 amendment. Is there a discussion? Chair Wiginius.
Yes. You all have been talking about the cost to consumers, and now you want an amendment that could send electric rates just skyrocketing. There's one nuclear plant in, being constructed in the United States right now, and it's in Georgia. Its cost overruns have now... I have it at a $28 billion price tag. That's double its original cost. It's 5 years behind. And now the Trump administration is giving them $3.7 billion more dollars, and it's only half complete. So, members, to protect our ratepayers, I would ask you to vote no.
Further discussion, Representative Szczesinski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I would speak to the 821, and, you know, I think this would just simply, is not mandating the use, it's not mandating the construction, it just simply is opening up, you know, businesses. We talked a little bit about the market, we talked a little bit about those folks deeply ingrained in it, and just simply allowing that, it takes the time it would take for potential technology to develop or the time it would take for a potential project to be approved and straightforward, move forward through the process, I think could take up to 10 or 15 years. So, you know, we're talking about long timelines, long lead times, and essentially trying to rely on technology that doesn't exist in part of these bills. And so one of the areas that other parts of the world have made constant energy is nuclear, and I don't believe it necessarily will add costs because we're not mandating it. It's just simply that they could potentially look at it. And when you have a ban, a straight-up ban is in force within the state, and I think that's not necessarily what we should be doing when it comes to policymakers, but allowing that at least to be looked at and studied, which I think that which this amendment would do, and I would appreciate your support.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to concur with Representative Wagenius on the cost. And you know, I'm reminded that this is, you know, the nuclear industry is probably the biggest government-subsidized piece of our whole energy system, you know, given the Price-Anderson Act, which really allowed the nuclear industry to exist. But in addition to that, members, you know, one of the reasons that nuclear power has been stalled out and discredited is that we haven't found a storage site for, you know, this highly radioactive waste that's going to, you know, be very dangerous for tens of thousands of years. The Yucca Mountain site was a failure. There are no substitutions. And so rather than generating this highly radioactive waste that we don't know what to do with for generations, I think we've taken a prudent course in not constructing any more additional plants. So I would strongly advise a no vote on the 821 amendment.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go on record to support the A21 amendment. We've talked about a number of things through the committee span last few weeks, but my concern again goes back to the rural communities about the jobs that are going to be lost if we continue to kind of hammer on the natural gas industry, the propane industry. We talked earlier about a steel company that's wanting to do some good things here. Oil refineries, fossil fuel got us here. We need to make sure that all ideas are on the table that produce good energy, good paying jobs. You know, if this bill kind of made its way someday to reality and electrification was where we're going, we are going to see far more jobs lost than gained on this project. So I really do support the A21 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A21 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Nay.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. The A22 amendment, is that being offered?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative
I would like to offer the A22 amendment.
It's been tried.
Representative Szczesinski moves the A22 amendment.
Yes, the A22 is pretty straightforward. We found, you know, with the last polar vortex that came through, and we had some communities have to shut down their natural gas grid and ask folks to turn their heaters down and other things. We had, you know, lower output within the solar and the wind energy. And this bill would simply ask that when integrated resource plans are brought before the committee, that the PUC would essentially really weigh as its first goal as grid reliability. You know, whether you're in a manufacturing business, a small school, hospital, or the rest, you know, grid reliability must be the paramount issue in which we are addressing any of these things. And just for the sake of maintaining and pushing a technology or an idea, some of them potentially being untested when it comes to an integrated resource plan for the amount of resource we're asking from it, that they keep that first and foremost in mind, and I'd appreciate your support.
Since I'm the author of the underlying bill, I'll speak to this. I'm not sure why we would prioritize reliability over affordability. The PUC can already consider reliability, and there are other important factors that they should be able to consider, including affordability, so I would urge a no vote. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of A22 say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. The A23 amendment being offered. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to offer the 823 amendment. This
Representative
simply,
Mecklen moves the 823 amendment.
Thank you. This simply puts in language that the commission will, to the maximum extent possible, prioritize the hiring of workers from communities that host retiring power plants, including but not limited to Becker, Monticello, Oak Park, Heights, and Red Wing.
Discussion on the 823 amendment. Chair Wiggins.
Thank you. This bill, actually, if you read it completely, will see all sorts of protection for workers, and that was one of the themes in the bill. I don't think we have to single out some, so I would ask members to vote no.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Is there further discussion on the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wagenius?
Chair votes no.
Representative Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Akam?
No.
Representative Baker?
Yep.
Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen? Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Halverson?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Mecklen?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
We had other rep. Mr. Chair, you had another member show up in here too.
The votes are 5 in favor and 7 opposed. The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to reconsider that amendment. We had a couple other members show up during the roll call.
I'm consulting on whether you're able to make that motion. So there's a motion to reconsider. All those in favor of the motion to reconsider, say aye.
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 All those opposed? No.
No.
Motion to reconsider fails. We are on the A24 amendment. Is that being?
Yes, I would like to move the A24 amendment. You know, we've talked, whether it be folks from industry like Excel, local utilities, or the folks from the power folks, looking at what acres are going to be potentially taken out of production and just what this would potentially mean. You know, I think as these things come down the pipe, it's a good idea to be able to track it. We've got a lot of areas of agriculture being taken out, whether it be from buffer strips or legacy funds going out and using state dollars to buy up land, just so that before integrated resource plan is filed, we should do a study just so we understand how many acres would be potentially taken out of agricultural production, just from a general, what could a potential impact it would be on the economy. And it would kind of kick in at each of the rates at 50%, 75%, and 100% from the carbon standpoint, and I'd appreciate your vote.
Is there a discussion on the amendment? Chair Wiggenius.
Yes. First of all, I would note that this just says number of acres, not number of ag acres. Nonetheless, it is extremely difficult to add this as part of a resource plan. You're asking utilities to do lots of extra work, and because it's going to be difficult for them to know how much acreage we're talking about. We don't know how much is going to be wind. We don't know how much is going to be solar, how much is going to be need to be buffered around each site. So this is all very site specific, and I think members need to vote no.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 824 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Is the 825 amendment being offered?
Yes, thank you.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A25 amendment.
Representative Swazinski moves the A25 amendment.
And this just is more focused just on the the folks of the, asking the Department of Commerce to really track how many acres the particular area for solar gardens is taking up. You know, because it potentially has the ability to be kind of scattered around the metropolitan area and what that means. We've heard a lot in the past about urban sprawl and what that could affect development within the state, and just being able to track and keep a kind of a running total as things are coming through on how many acres are being affected, I think would be a good just standpoint on what's being affected out there, kind of along the lines of A24, probably a little bit less onerous than the other bill, but probably just a good maybe compromise position with the A25 amendment.
Discussion on the A25. Chair Wagenius.
Thank you. This amendment is put in the program administration section of community solar gardens, and it does not help in the administration of community solar gardens to have this tracking language. It's not necessary for the decisions about administering the program. Maybe a better amendment for you to think about for later would how much a farmer could earn and others could earn by leasing their land. I would ask for no vote on this.
Seeing no further discussion on the 825 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Is the 826 amendment being offered?
Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, I would like to move the 826 amendment.
Representative Swazinski moves the 826 amendment.
Yes, indeed. So this amendment is, I think, very conducive to past public policy, particularly in this area. And it would very simply exempt iron mining, forestry, and other major industries from the 100% carbon-free standard. You know, obviously, these plants and these factories and these mines are large job producers to our state, but also exceptionally energy intensive. And I think with the uncertainty of the market, obviously the iron industry within the state of the United States and particularly here in the state of Minnesota has seen a definite rebound with the reopening of mines and the reopening of jobs and opportunity up in northeastern Minnesota. And I think this really helps this bill become a one Minnesota by recognizing the differences in the economies, the wants and the needs of those particular businesses, and allowing them to be exempt from this potential crux as far as from an energy conservation and putting energy preservation above the local economy. And I'd ask for a green vote, please.
Since this amendment speaks to a bill of which I am the author, I will speak to it as well. I oppose the amendment. As written, it would state that any cost of complying with the subdivision, which is the 100% standard, would not be chargeable to the industrials. So presumably no new renewable energy could be charged to the industrials, which doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. Further discussion. Representative Garofalo.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's the way our solar standard applies right now. Your DFL colleagues in 2013, when they passed the solar mandate, made a specific point to exclude energy-intensive trade-exposed industries. And I'm assuming the chair voted for that. She voted for that provision. I mean, I opposed it on the House floor. But I'm wondering why would we exclude part of solar but then include other parts of solar? Can someone explain that to me? Maybe the chair could do that.
Representative Garofalo, to this amendment, if the goal is to charge zero of the 100% of new renewable energy that is coming online to the large industrials, that seems to be a pretty absurd outcome, in my opinion.
Mr. Chairman, right now, you can't charge the solar to them right now. The solar mandate that's in law, you can't charge to them. So you're saying that you want to have new solar be applied to these customers, but old solar will not be?
Representative Garofalo, I understand your point, but this is to the 100% language in the bill, which is a different provision from the existing solar provision, and it would result in even new wind power not being chargeable to the industrials, which I think is an outcome that Minnesotans would not support, considering the cost shifting that would result to residential customers.
But, Mr. Chairman, this is the same. Again, this is the same thing. You recognize the fact that an increase in homeowners' bills is certainly problematic, but the DFL majority took a look at this and decided that this was going to jeopardize an entire industry in the state. Again, the chair voted for that. So I didn't see any DFL plans to expand. Did the DFL plan on expanding the solar mandate to cover the energy-intensive trade-exposed Industries? I don't remember that, seeing that bill this year. I mean, there was testimony in committee. There was a revolt on the House floor from rural DFL legislators. Not that there's any of those left anymore, but that the that this was going to wipe out an entire industry. Is this not of concern or relevance? And do we have a roll call on this vote yet? Can we have a roll call on this, please?
Roll call has been requested.
I mean, Mr. Chairman and members, this, I mean, very literally, I mean, rarely can you tie a piece of legislation to the ability to destroy an industry. And maybe that's the intent. Maybe this is the way to get at copper nickel mining. Maybe that's the way to take it out, is you can't do it through the federal regulatory process. You can't do it through the Army Corps of Engineers. So the response is that we're just going to drive up electricity rates to make it non-competitive. So maybe that's the goal. But again, DFL members, the legislature took a look at this in 2013. Representative Halverson, you were here. You voted for it. Representative Hornstein, you voted for it as well. It was actually over Republican objections that you guys put those provisions in place, where you the cloquet carve-out, where you guys carved out a special group of people who got a little preferred interest and treatment in applying the solar mandate, and now there seems to be a change of course. There seems to be a recognition that, or an unrecognition that this is a problem. So this is putting thousands of highly paid union jobs at risk, from miners to carpenters to the 49ers. It's a provision that, if this is ever going to happen, is going to have to be in law anyways, because if you wipe out the taconite industry in this state, well, I mean, vote how you want, I guess. This is the consequences of having a majority party with only DFL, with only Metro members on a committee, so do what you want.
Representative Garofalo, I don't agree with your assessment that energy costs are going to go up with renewable energy, which is the cheapest energy at this point. But to speak to this amendment in particular, I don't think anybody that I know would support a zero utility bill going to a customer in the state, which is what this amendment would do.
Mr. Chairman, if it doesn't raise the rates, then why are they excluded under current law?
Representative Garofalo, I'm speaking to the language that's before us in the amendment.
It's the same underlying issue, Mr. Chairman. The issue is that whether these projects are going to increase the cost of energy. Now, I know the sales pitch we've been given is that, you know, somehow capacity factors of 13% in northern Minnesota are going to produce all this energy we need. Well, apparently, you know, DFLers took a look at it in 2013 and said this is going to raise costs. That's why they excluded the industry from the costs.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, and I would just, you know, echo the fact. I mean, this is carbon copy language of the 2013 carve-out. This essentially just takes that language, which was bipartisanly support, and move it forward and patch it into this piece of bill. I mean, you know, this is the second area, folks, where, you know, we had an earlier amendment that talked about the rural utilities and municipalities, and allowing those folks who are Democrat, I mean, they're elected folks, they have elected boards. These folks have a governing body in which can help with their decision making. And quite frankly, if you ask Representative Listigard, if you ask Representative Eklund, if you ask Representative Sandsteed, if you ask other representatives from that area, they will agree that this amendment is by and large. I mean, has any of you folks talked to them? I mean, you're going to sit here today and say, we know better than you on how your industry needs to work and how your industry needs to move forward, when it's already in law, this section, under current law. And you're going to tell them that we know how to run your area of the state better than they do. And I can guarantee you, when you ask them that question, they're going to say, yes, we would support this amendment. And we talk about a one Minnesota. It's not W-O-N, it's O-N-E. And I understand where the votes are coming from, and they're not coming from rural Minnesota on these particular issues, but that doesn't mean you don't have to listen, and that you can at least open your ears and understand that maybe the concerns are a little bit different than they are in other parts of the state on particular issues that really mean big jobs, good jobs, industry labor. I mean, we talk about our security. We talk about our ability to produce things ourselves. Having an industry in the state of Minnesota, whether that's ferrous or non-ferrous, quite frankly, is not just an economic development tool. It's also a strategic tool that allows us to build things here in the United States using American-built steel for strategic times, folks. We're in a global environment where we have to be competitive. We're dealing with issues across, I mean, President Trump, whether you agree with him or not, China has taken a very offensive position when it comes to dumping steel on the U.S. markets, driving down prices, taking our industries out. This is just a small little step, this amendment right here, that can help those rural industries that are energy intensive, that their own members from your own party in this one would agree, that actually represent those people, would agree that this policy should move forward and should be placed into this bill. And I understand that, you know, we say, well, we don't want to let anyone out because we don't want to, you know, we want to have one idea. Well, one idea is not necessarily a good one. And this, folks, is just a pretty straightforward little piece, and I would recommend that you vote for it on behalf of your colleagues in the Iron Range.
Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wagenius?
No.
Representative Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Akam?
No.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Bierman?
No.
Representative Bowe?
Aye.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Halverson?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Mecklen?
Aye.
Representative Stevenson?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
There being six ayes and eight nays, the amendment is not adopted. Is there an author for the 827 amendment? Representative Mecklen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A-27.
Representative Mecklen moves the A-27.
This amendment is pretty simple. We have two different pieces of language in this bill, one where they say large hydro is not, or they have an exception for large hydro, and the other side they don't. So all this says is that they strike the language with the capacity of less than 100 megawatts and insert carbon-free resources includes hydropower of any capacity.
Since this speaks to a bill that I'm the author of, I'll speak to it as well. I oppose the amendment. It's not necessary. The page 15, line 2, is the existing renewable energy standard, which we've already met, and hydropower is a carbon-free resource, so it is not necessary. I oppose it. Further discussion on the A27? Representative Mecklen.
Is there a chance we could have Bob Eloff explain, is large-scale hydro treated in the current law of this bill, which way it is, for the resource planning purposes?
Mr. Ely.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mecklen, line 1-3 of the amendment is the renewable energy standard. So that's been enforced for a long time. On line 1-4, this the new language pertains to the definition of carbon-free resource under the IRP statute, and the existing definition there does not mention hydropower at all.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, Mr. Chair. You know, we heard from earlier testimony that was very specific in the fact that we have large utilities that are purchasing large amounts of hydro in the future. And by all means, intents and purposes, I don't think anyone would disagree that, yes, while hydro is in part of the renewable, but it's not part of the carbon-free, and it absolutely, positively needs to be part of that conversation. And I believe if it is legislative intent, I mean, I would like you to speak to that. If it's your legislative intent that large and small hydro would be considered carbon-free, that we absolutely need to keep it in here. And I think it is. And I would ask, I mean, if there are folks from the department that could speak to this, not as a public testimony, but simply as a clarification, whether it's nonpartisan staff or research or whomever. But I truly believe that we need to stand with this and make all hydro part of the carbon-free standard.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Eloff.
Can I maybe clarify something? I'm looking at the definition of carbon-free resource in the DE. In the IRP section, it says carbon-free resource means a generation technology that, when operating, does not contribute to statewide greenhouse gas emissions. I think hydropower of any capacity fits under that definition.
Is there further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mecklen. Representative Garofalo, Trump Chair.
Well,
Representative
you.
Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Chair Wagenius, I've heard you in previous committees say that hydropower actually does increase greenhouse gas emissions. Is that your opinion? You're the ultimate chief author of this bill. Is it your opinion that this applies to hydro or not?
Chair Wagenius.
Thank you. There have been studies that have said that. I did not bring those studies with me today, but we can get those and bring them for another committee hearing.
So, Mr. Chairman, it sounds like there's a dispute over whether the DFL thinks 100% clean, renewable hydropower is carbon-free.
Representative Mecklen.
I would like to withdraw this amendment.
Okay. The 827 has been withdrawn. Is there an author for the 828 amendment? Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the 828 amendment.
Representative Mecklen moves the A28.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would also allow, with full carbon capture and storage technology, to count as carbon-free. If you have a coal plant that is 100% carbon capture and storage technology to the emissions, it should be counted as carbon-free under the state law.
Representative Mecklen, since this speaks to a bill I've authored, I'll speak to the amendment. I oppose the amendment. The Public Utilities Commission will have the ability to determine what is carbon-free under this amendment. Carbon capture and storage technology could mean a wide variety of things, and I think it should be up to the Public Utilities Commission to make that determination. Is there further discussion? Chair Wagenius.
I would just add to that, and maybe people don't remember or you weren't here, but in 2007, we funded a major study to look at the potential of carbon sequestration in the state of Minnesota. And I pulled up the study, and it was about the potential. And here are the conclusions of the study, just quickly, because I think this is a promise that is not going to be useful for Minnesotans. It said the very low probability of success in confirming suitable geologic conditions for deep geologic sequestration of CO2 in Minnesota. And there was a second conclusion. They were looking at the possibility of sedimentary rocks and whether they could take carbon. And it looked at the rocks here and said their properties are not favorable for CO2 storage. So I think we don't want to make a promise of something that is not viable in Minnesota.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, didn't they explore the opportunity to build a carbon dioxide pipeline too and send it out to North Dakota? Wasn't that one of the scenarios of that that initiative they studied? Or was that the Excelsior Energy one?
So,
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. There's some legislative humor here from the past. I'm sorry. Maybe you and I are the only ones that on the joke. I'm sorry. So, no, but I do think
we'll take it as a rhetorical question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Representative Kuczynski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I would just speak to this. I mean, you know, by the 100% carbon-free, we are already, essentially laying our hat upon technology that doesn't exist. Whether the conversation happened out in Washington, D.C. by Democrats or Republicans, they understand the fact that the danger of moving policy like this forward is it simply does not exist and it shouldn't. And so the idea that you would say something doesn't exist or something's not cost-effective simply doesn't, allow for the potential innovation for the American entrepreneur, the ability for industry to adapt to the changing needs of the wants and needs of their customer, and, you know, the definite change that's happened in the Bakken and what that could potentially mean in North Dakota as a kind of a closed-loop energy system and what that would mean to that and the sequestration and, you know, I absolutely don't think this is, just as our amendment with the talks of potentially opening the idea that nuclear could be considered, I don't see how this could potentially raise the cost of anything. This simply says if it's found and if it seems to be proven that we should be able to allow it and open that conversation because guess what, folks? If you look globally what's going on, while Germany has done a lot of neat things, it's done a lot of bad things and it's crashed and burned when it comes to your energy consumption.
They got rid of it from more of a political standpoint, especially after the Japanese nuclear issue. They made a conscious political decision to divest themselves of nuclear power. But what are they doing instead? They're burning coal. And, you know, I think it's understandable that we have a resource here in the United States. It is going to get burned. It is going to get used. It is going to produce electricity. It's whether or not we get to have that electricity and that energy be produced here in the United States and contribute to our local economy, or we get to simply export it to other parts of the world, other parts that are less controlled, other parts that are less environmentally friendly, and understand the technologies for what they are as potentially good things, and simply export that value added to their economy so that they can probably more and large compete against our local jobs here in the United States. So for that reason, I think just on a pure a debatable and a common sense platform, I think we should move that bill forward. I thank Representative Mecklen for pushing that forward. So I ask for your support.
Seeing no further discussion on the A28, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Is there an author for the A29 amendment?
Mr. Chair, that was mine. We tried this one earlier. I'm just going to withdraw that amendment.
The A29 is withdrawn. Is there an author for the A30?
Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we're obviously the Department of Commerce came forward with Commissioner Kelly to request, I believe it was $1,050,000 to simply recapture and pay back the state of North Dakota for their legal fees. And I believe that's going to be shared between that and the PUC on an even level. And, you know, it's our belief that this could potentially, this language, often really potentially mirror that of what's potentially happened with the North Dakota lawsuit. And this would simply get us away from that and try to fix it so that we are not going to put ourselves in legal jeopardy as a state, so that we only have the Department of Commerce asking for $1 million in the future to help defend a lost lawsuit at the hand of a judge. So I think this most definitely protects our state, our taxpayers, our departments, and most importantly, our ratepayers in the state of Minnesota, as this has the chance of moving forward. And I would ask for your support.
Representative Swazinski moves the A30. Is there a discussion? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As this relates to my underlying bill, I wanted to speak to it and say that I think that this amendment misunderstands the North Dakota decision. The language in this bill is very different than the language that was at issue in that case, and I would urge a no vote.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A30, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Is there an author for the A31? Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A31.
Representative Baker moves the A31.
So this brings back the SIP program. Again, for folks kind of new to this, it's the Conservation Improvement Program. It's really something that, again, is important to the munis, the co-ops, about how this program is working. To go back a little bit on this, the SIP program started back in the early 80s, and it was really designed to help save energy with some older units and systems and interrupters and things like that, and air conditioners for homes. And I think our ratepayers have done a really good job, and our utility companies and our munis have done a really nice job of deploying this out in the customer base and sharing with them information about how to save energy. And I will tell you that I like the SIP program. What I want the committee to consider is actually taking this language and replacing it with Representative Eklund's bill, the House File 1839, and I think what it does is it allows the utilities of the munis and the co-ops a little bit more time to kind of execute their plans. It's much more favored to the munis and the co-ops. One of the things that I'm sad about this bill as a whole, and as it kind of has worked through, hey, thanks. That looks really good. Thanks, but I'll pass right now while I'm talking. So I think I'll just pass it along. But what this does is
you'll regret passing on the chairs.
I probably will. But I think my underlying tone on this last effort to try to get some more reasonable SIP on this bill, Mr. Chair, is to say that you're listening to the munis and the co-ops. I don't think they have felt heard on this bill. I think that everything that you have done here has been with everybody, but not everybody plays on the same field. This would be a little step. It's supported by Representative Eklund, who also I'm a co-author on this bill. I want to see the SIP program continue. It's going to be easier for the smaller utilities and the munis to do this. I hope that the committee can show the smaller utility companies that this is one way we can help, and by giving them a little bit more time. It's still moving the SIP in the right direction. It just taps the brakes a little bit for the smaller players. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I sure do hope I get your support on this amendment.
Discussion on the A31. Chair Wagenius.
Well, thank you. Members, this takes out the governor's provisions about efficiency that we adopted in the amendment. It also, there's another perspective here, as you are looking at it from the point of view of the utility. I think we need to also look at from the point of view of customers, because you're taking away some of the opportunities that customers have for efficiency. You're taking away some of the opportunities for customers to change their fuel use. And because of that, I would ask members to vote no.
Seeing no further discussion on the A31, all those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed? No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Is there an author for the A32?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes, I'd like to offer the A32, sorry.
Representative Swazinski moves the A32 amendment.
Before the committee, and, you know, this simply amendment, I think, in a way, can really keep the community and community solar gardens. You know, that was one of the conversations we had, is talking about folks being able to buy in and purchase from a residential or a more of a utility size consumer or industrial size consumer. And this would allow for one of the issues that is that you were talking about is to for the contiguous counties. And one of the reasons for moving that to contiguous counties is that there are people that are essentially orphaned out in rural Minnesota that can't purchase in and buy in. And this would allow folks from a non-contiguous county up to the point of 3% to purchase. So come in and buy from a non-contiguous county. So keeping it as a contiguous county program, which allows, really keeps the community in community gardens, which I think is exceptionally important because that's the way it was sold, and that's where a vast majority of subscribers are, from the metro. Keeping those projects nice and tight to the metro, but allowing folks from rural Minnesota that don't have enough to buy in to simply purchase their load in from a further out part of the state. And so this simply, I think, is a pressure relief valve that would allow folks that are wanting this and to choose this as an option. But to also keep the letter of the law and the intent of the law as originally written by that. So I would ask for your support.
Since this amendment is to a bill of mine, I'll speak to it. I oppose the amendment. I believe this is too restrictive and limits the ability to do good projects in rural Minnesota. And also was spoken to in committee that there are some counties that are very close together, even though they're not contiguous. So this wouldn't address that issue.
You're welcome.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A32?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No. The amendment is not adopted. Is there an author for the A33?
Yes, I'll take the A33 while we're at it.
Representative Swazinski.
The A33 amendment simply is kind of dealing with LIHEAP. It's essentially, the goal of this amendment is to get rid of any double dipping for subscribers to LIHEAP. And solar gardens that appropriates, I think, $1 million from RDA to LIHEAP. And LIHEAP includes home winterization programs. It's also an appropriate use of RDA money, simply getting rid of some of the double dipping that could potentially occur. I think keeping a clear tracking of where the finances are going and allowing things to be a little bit easier to track for the taxpayers and ratepayers of Minnesota.
Representative Swazinski moves the A33 amendment. Since this is to a bill that I'm carrying, I'll speak to this as well. I oppose the amendment. I adore LIHEAP, and I strongly support finding more funding and appreciate the effort here. But I'm sad that you're taking it from my electric vehicles, and think would rather work from you on the general fund to see if we can find a way to support LIHEAP funding further. Representative Baker?
No.
Nope. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A33, say
aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. The amendment is not adopted. Is there an author for the A34? Representative Baker, you're up now.
Mr. Chair, this is my last amendment for the night, so I want to make this one a good one. And so hang on. I'm not going to pull a Fabian on the board. It's on the wall. That's okay. So we're all right. But members, this talks a little bit about the value of solar that we learned a lot about when we talked about the community garden solars projects that we learned about. This value of solar is a real kind of a squishy thing that right now I believe strongly is artificially high. And the developers are making a lot of money based on this formula of value of solar. The biggest chunk that makes up the value of solar is the price of natural gas. So the lower the price of natural gas goes down, the lower the value of solar will go down. I am not going to take these cookies anymore. Guys, that's not even taken away by a spin here. What's going on?
Interrupting his
flow. Anyway, to do that, and I think one of the things we really learned about was how fast solar is dropping when it comes to utility-grade solar. What I'd like to want to do with this amendment is it actually helps lower the price of energy to the customers that are not on the solar program. It's a better return. It's a fair return to the folks that are on the programs and the subscription agreements. So instead of using the cost of natural gas, let's use the cost of utility-grade solar. It just gets it down faster, cheaper. It's the right way to go. It's a better way to value solar, in my opinion, and I think it's a fabulous idea. And I can't wait to hear your response, Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker, I think you'll be a little disappointed. Do appreciate your interest
Thank
in value
you.
Of solar
Thank
methodology. I think that the Public Utilities Commission has done a fine job. Spent 3 years developing their
Somebody
their
pass
method,
him a cookie, so. Though. Have a cookie, would you please?
I haven't
Just
had
have
time to eat my cookies, you know, otherwise I might have been in a better
Mr.
mood.
Chair.
So I do oppose the amendment.
Oh, bummer.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A34 say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. The amendment is not adopted. Is there an author for the A35 amendment? Representative Bowe.
So first I will embrace the ginger. So I would like to move the A35 amendment.
Representative Bowe moves the A35 amendment.
I believe the A35 is a friendly amendment. It seeks to maintain a popular program that promotes increased lighting efficiency, and it also encourages collaborative efforts for recycling those efficient lighting components at the end of their life.
Chair Wagenius.
Well, I appreciate Representative Bull finding a place where the statutes definitely needed to be updated, and I would urge people to vote yes.
So we are ending on a comity and high note. All those in favor of the A35 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are to the bill. Is there discussion to the DE1? Representative Swazinski.
What's that?
I simply didn't hear
what was just said.
We've adopted the amendments. We are now, we've worked through the amendments. We are now on the DE1. Is there discussion to the DE1? I'll recognize Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, you're all fools. No one would eat cookies out of a tray in the month of March with Merry Christmas stamped on the side of it, okay?
Might be month-old cookies.
Aware of that.
Chair Wagenius, a rebuttal?
Cookies.
All right, well, trust but verify.
Chair Wagenius assures us they are freshly baked.
So a couple of questions, Garofalo. And I just want to hopefully impart some knowledge that maybe someone would listen to. So right now in the state of Minnesota, we have community solar projects where there is no cost shifting, they're fully subscribed, and there's no subsidy. They're taking place right now in the state of Minnesota. Consumers are saving money. It's voluntary, and it's winning. Why on earth do we have to subsidize and mandate this requirement when right now we have examples of successful projects in our state that are voluntary, no cost shifting, sold out, and have no subsidies? And you have to ask yourself that question. You have to answer it yourself. Well, why on earth the legislature would be sticking its nose into this stuff when you can have these projects without that sort of interference and that sort of added expense? Mr. Chairman and members, in 1978, The U.S. Congress passed the Power Plant and Industrial Fuel Use Act. And in 1978, that law prohibited, under federal law, the use of natural gas to create electricity generation. Technology has a way of rendering poor legislative decisions look pretty stupid in the future. Less than 10 years later, that bill was repealed, despite the fact that in the late 1970s, President Carter addressed the nation and complained that too few electric utilities had switched to coal. That was in the 1970s, and things have changed. Technology gets better. Technology improves things. That renders the debates and the trade-offs of today relevant with technological advance. So we fast forward as recently as 2007. Here in the Minnesota House of Representatives, we debated a resolution on the issue of something called peak oil. And Mr. Chairman, if you just allow me a little bit of latitude on this, peak oil was the theory that we had found all the oil in the world, and that the only oil we were going to get was going to be in environmentally sensitive areas, it was going to be super expensive, that we had reached all the oil, and we were looking at $200 a barrel for oil. This is in 2007. The first time, with God as my witness, I had ever heard about fracking in North Dakota, Representative Sandra Erickson got up on the floor and literally said, you know, I know some people who live out in North Dakota, and apparently they found some oil out there. And the rest, of course, is history. It created the shale gas revolution. The United States is now, for the first time, an energy exporter as opposed to an importer of that energy. And there's an abundance of natural gas. During the polar vortex, natural gas was less than $3 an MCF at a time when we were using record demand. Again, technology renders the debates moot and useless. When it comes to, so when we're debating this bill today and where we're going forward, what are the things to look for? Well, I think it's fair to say that when you take a look at the issue of wind generation, the successes in wind generation have exceeded anyone's expectations. The production tax credit at the federal level is being reduced, so there's less subsidizing of it. We have lower costs for wind. The capacity factors are higher. And the number one state in the country for wind generation is, Mr. Chairman, what state?
Texas.
Texas, correct. Three times. See, knowledgeable chair. Look at that. Three times, right? Texas. With I believe it's over 21,000 megawatts of installed capacity. And they don't have a renewable energy standard. They don't have a mandate for this stuff. But what they do have is they have a pretty forward-thinking policy and administration, not all of them, but some of their ideas on energy that are working pretty well. And so at that same time frame we're seeing this, we see that as natural gas and wind have increased their footprint in MISO, in the electricity generation, we're also seeing declines in the amount of coal. And I think if you talk to those in the coal and the lignite industry, they'll be very candid with you that they need, I mean, they have to up their game and come up with a technologically superior solution in order to compete in the 21st century. There hasn't been maybe Mr. Eloff can tell me, but I can't remember the last time a coal plant was built in the United States of America. I mean, it's difficult to get financing for it. But I will tell you that just like in 2007, when we learned about fracking and how the shale gas revolution was changing things, it's happening again up in North Dakota with Project Tundra. And you have to ask yourself that if that technological breakthrough, if it doesn't take place, the coal industry is done. It's just, we live in a carbon-constrained environment. That's just the way it is. No one's going to finance it. And it's going to, with the exception of exports to other countries, the industry is going to go away. But if what happens for coal with Project Tundra is what happened with fracking and the shale gas revolution, you're going to have the ability to have abundant energy at 3 to 4 cents a kilowatt hour with zero carbon emissions. And how stupid are we going to look shoveling tens of billions of dollars into technologically inferior products when that takes place? So I can't pretend that I know the future. back in 2005, 2006, the smartest people, the hedge fund managers, what were they putting all their money into? Natural gas importation facilities. Billions of dollars at our ports to take natural gas from other countries here on super tankers that are chilled, heating it up, putting it into our pipelines, because after all, it was a universal fuel. And the United States was never going to be able to meet our goal, be able to produce all the natural gas we would need. It was never going to happen. And these guys, you know, these people, men and women, smart people who had studied it, they put tens of billions of dollars into that those things. And what happened? You know, Mr. George Mitchell down in Texas found a way to innovate and get it all that shale gas and shale resources. And it was a worldwide game changer. And as a result, those importation facilities went bankrupt, and now they're converting them, turning them around, and they're export facilities, where we're becoming the energy supplier for the world. And so, members, I would just ask through the prism of history that you take a look at that, be aware of it. Energy mandates are a very powerful weapon. They're a very powerful weapon. They don't show up in the general fund spreadsheets. They don't show up in the tracking sheets and have targets in the Ways and Means Committee. But they're a really big deal. And these mandates are powerful, and they're a weapon. And you want to make sure that you don't wave around that weapon like a little kid who just found his dad's gun. And you want to be careful. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of years. I know Representative Lagunias, I'm curious to see how you and Senator Osment work together. I think it's going to be one of the more fascinating conference committees this year. I know your heart's in the right place. We don't see things eye to eye, but we do have agreements on quite a few policies. I think the electrification stuff is something that's going to be that's a good bipartisan win that I hope you're able to extract from conference committee. But members, I would just caution you to be in that area and tread in that area carefully. You know, there's a possibility that, you know, right now we have checks and balances in Minnesota. In 2 years, that may not happen, right? And so it's going to be Democrats who have to put their foot on the brake pedal to say, hey, let's take a little, you know, more mature or more long view of this. Take a look at that. So that's my little speech, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity and the indulgence. I'll be voting no on this bill today, but I hope that more DFL members do engage in the debate and understand the trade-offs of policy. Thank you. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And again, I've always appreciated working on this committee. This is my fifth year out of five that I've been on this committee. I've really enjoyed it. But it's been more painful this year, I think. Obviously, I'm in a different role. But I have really heard a lot of testimony, but I haven't heard it from people that I thought should have been heard more, and that's the stakeholders. I really don't think that we took enough time, or at least the authors of these bills, took enough time to talk to the munis, the co-ops, XL Energy, Otter Tail, Minnesota Power, CenterPoint Gas. I think it wasn't done well enough to bring some of these parties together. And even some of the bills that were put together with some agreements at the last minute were choked with other additions that didn't have to happen when there was agreement reached on some really good things like storage energy and those kind of things. There were some really bad things done earlier on. You know, if this is kind of the new Green Deal, then I really think Greater Minnesota got the red raw deal. And I don't think this is a good bill for Greater Minnesota. So, again, I think we missed some great opportunities. I think the stakeholders were not heard loud enough. These are the people that make, you know, one company alone makes over 50% of the energy in our communities. And I don't think they were heard nearly enough. We have to listen to what they do. But you did listen to the environmentalist activists. You listened to the big out-of-state solar garden owners. We heard earlier that's 89% of the solar garden owners. And you listened to the Department of Commerce. But the utilities missed out. And they are the ones who have to implement the 77-page energy bill. So as Representative Garofalo has said, these could come back and haunt us if this happens. And this is going to be a troublesome bill. We talked a lot about the solar gardens this year. I learned a lot about that. We learned that truly there is a higher cost if this program grows like the committee wants to see it grow. And then again, that is going to cost ratepayers more money. And I don't think it's to the right end of it when we can buy utility scale solar for a third or even a quarter for what they're going to put it on for the community solar gardens. So we try to add a lot of things to this bill. We try to make things more transparent. We try to make sure that we're helping people understand their energy bills better and cleaner. We try to add transparency on those things and on those unregulated energy sellers, but we were voted down every time. And we try to improve some of the off-ramps. We try to make sure that not just utility companies would say, hey, we have some issues here, we want to pause it in front of the PUC. But nothing was allowed to be added to this bill where a company in good standing or a large user couldn't say, we have some serious issues with this to the PUC commission, and that would be a problem because we really want it to stop. We've got these examples. It's not going to happen. It was just swing and a miss, and that's disappointing. Again, I wanted to support a bill this year. This isn't the bill. I hope it can get a lot better when it goes to conference. I hope that we can support something when it comes back. But this is not the time to start mandating when somebody said we have a goal in mind of 100% renewable by 2050. It doesn't mean we have to make it in law. It doesn't mean we have to go to that. So members, disappointed, can't support it today. Happy to listen to other thoughts. Thank you.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I just really have to take issue with the characterization of the process that led to this bill that was just articulated. Because as someone who's part of that process, I can tell you that all of the groups and entities that were just named are people who sat in my office and talked to me about components of this bill. And I'm happy to talk to any of them at any time. I know that other members of the committee feel the same way. I know that a lot of those groups have been in the offices of other members of this committee, and so I really take exception to that. I'd also point out that a lot of the provisions that are in this bill are being carried by Republicans in the Senate, including what I think is probably, I mean, a little biased since it's my bill, but I think is one of the most important pieces in this bill. The Clean Energy First section is being carried by one of the most senior Republicans in the Senate, Senator Senjum, who, you know, when that bill was heard in the Senate Energy Committee just a couple weeks ago, said it was the single most important piece of legislation he had carried in his entire legislative career. And so I think there has been collaboration. I think there has been inclusion. I think there's been a lot of listening. There's been a lot of working together to try and find something that works for everyone. We haven't gotten there all the way on every single provision, and I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry that's disappointing, but I do think this has been an inclusive and collaborative process. And frankly, despite what you might have seen today in terms of the types of votes you saw, it's also been a process that has some bipartisanship to it, because there are bills that are being carried on the other side by Republicans. And I just want to conclude by saying I think this bill does an enormous amount of good, and I want to take us back to the beginning of our time in this committee together this year, where we heard from scientists talking about the enormous dangers and changes that are facing Minnesota over the next few decades if we don't take strong action now. And so we need to do something like this bill. We need to do it to preserve the Minnesota that we all know and love so that our children and our grandchildren and their children and their grandchildren can enjoy our boreal forests, can enjoy loon calls at night, can enjoy all of the things that we love about Minnesota. So I'm thrilled to vote for this bill.
Chair Wagenius.
Well, I will just end up by saying I appreciate the acknowledgement that we have to deal with the carbon issue. Our youngest generation expects no less of us. And so this bill is just a down payment on the efforts to give the young Minnesotans the kind of promising future that our parents and grandparents gave to us. And with that, I would move.
I apologize, Chair. I hadn't seen Representative Swazinski's hand. So before we move, Representative Swazinski.
Yes, sorry about that, Madam Chair. I didn't mean to stomp
That's
on
fine.
Your finishing off. But I thought my hand was up. I thought I was seen earlier on. So I apologize for that. But I do want to just.
Next time they'll notice it.
What's that?
Use your left hand next time. They'll
notice it. Oh, there we go. We'll go both hands. No, I appreciate the committee here. But, you know, I think this. What's that? The committee, I mean, this bill is very concerning. You know, I think we've seen from the reports and the ownership, and those things should really concern us when it comes to the community solar portions of this bill. We pass out some information that you all can look at, and it talks really about where the ownership of community solar is going. You know, five utilities own about 42% within the state. Over 88, almost 90% of these are owned from out-of-state companies, folks. Warren Buffett being one of them, and purchasing up that capacity. I mean, those things should all be very concerning to us. That, you know, not only are these things profitable to the point that they can be profitable over and over again as they're sold, and profit taken off the top.
And, you know, it's not, it's folks at the ratepayers, it's mom and pop shops, it's families that are wind up paying for those profits. And, you know, if this is about getting carbon out of the atmosphere, if this is about truly, you know, making a difference when it comes to environment, none of the testifiers, even though I was asked many times, to say, what will this bill drop in our temperature? And no one could answer that question. And whether or not you believe in global warming or not, you know, let's at least have an economic discussion that says, let's at least go for the most cheapest, reliable, carbon-free technology out there. And we're not even doing that. And that should be concerning to all of us folks. You know, when you have the market solar is selling for 3 cents and we're forcing on the market something that's in the double digits, that doesn't make a bit of sense, folks. And, you know, who's going to pick the tab up for that? Well, it's going to be people's neighbors. It's going to be, you know, we've seen from the way these purchases are, it's going to be large businesses purchasing a vast majority of the energy or subscribing to a vast majority of the energy and passing those costs on to their neighbors and their customers. And so that's less money in the people's pockets, and that's less economic opportunities for those families around the state. You know, this Warren Buffett Green New Deal, you know, is a concern of mine. I've spoken over and over again. While the rents may be high, obviously there's not enough. I mean, we hear on a lot of different issues that it's going to save, a lot of different issues are going to save rural America, rural agriculture. Some people think that's going to be hemp production, and some people think that's going to be solar. Well, folks, we've got a lot of market changes across the country and the world. We produce a lot of grain, which is true. But at the end of the day, we do need the next generation to take over the farms. And that's one of the big concerns that I have, is that as you have young people who are bidding against the state with legacy dollars, when you have people bidding against other large entities such as energy producers in rural Minnesota, while the economic opportunity is there, but you're really not allowing for young people to come in and afford to join that farm and start the farm. I mean, the average agriculture producer in the state of Minnesota is in their 50s, getting really close to retirement. And those should be real concerns of ours, because we're not in a time like this when the economies of scale are down in agriculture. That's usually a time for young people to get in, be able to purchase land, and be able to maybe, you know, set their foot in the market. And with government regulation and programs like these, we've adversely kept the price of land high to keep young people out. And I think that's one of the concerns we have. As I've talked to cattlemen across the state, I've talked to young farmers who simply are losing out. They can't afford it. And I think government's to blame by a big part by propping up the price of land when naturally it would have come down because of market forces and grain. You know, I think it should be concerning that we had opportunities. You know, it's been told to us over and over again that this is going to save consumers money. We gave a lot of amendments over the last few days that would lock that in. Simply have some common sense guardrails on the off-ramps to say, hey, if you are negatively affected, that you could, as an individual or as in a business, you could petition the PUC and say, you know what, this is adversely affecting me. I want to be allowed to step off of it. Most definitely concerning is the when we voted down the stuff for northeastern Minnesota when it came to the mines and the timbers. Producers who are energy users who are highly, highly susceptible to market trends and cost. Those things should really concern you folks. And I would just ask each of you members on the DFL side to go talk to the members in northeastern Minnesota and ask them what their feelings are and how that's going to potentially affect the market economics of their region of the state. You know, those businesses leave and they close down. Those cities close down. And, you know, I think just some common sense in those particular areas and really looking at the allowance for local control in these particular things. While it's fun to say we're going to make a big difference across the state and have a big fat mandate on behalf of Warren Buffett, I don't believe that it's what's right for Minnesota, that we should allow some of these local utilities, municipalities. They have elected people that can make their decisions. They have locally elected folks that have made a decision. You know, essentially we could allow these cities and these rural communities to create sanctuaries. We believe in sanctuaries for other issue areas and allow sanctuaries in this particular area of thought. Because who knows best? Do you as a legislature know what's best for my school boards and my school district here in the metro? Absolutely not. And just as I don't know what's probably best for your school districts in your district in suburban Minnesota. And so the same is with our energy needs. I think we can still take those and have those mindsets you know, what does that mean? You know, I think, you know, Representative Baker, and it was taken into account, Representative Stevenson said, you know, we did bring people into the room. We did have these conversations. We did hear people out. But at the end of the day, the action is what matters. And if we move forward with policy that doesn't have large buy-in from industry and families and folks up the street, you know, it's not going to be move positive. And there are people with concerns. Yes, indeed, there are some folks in the Senate that are carrying some of these bills, I would say, to the detriment of some of their own constituencies. You know, it is concerning, and I think we need to take a lot of different voices in these things as we move them forward. And I think just the you know, keeping residential owners and keeping it community is going to be a big part of this moving forward. And I'm disappointed a lot of our amendments didn't make it on. I'm glad one or two of them did. I appreciate Representative Wagenius's openness to chat about the issues that are facing us and our concerns with bills, and I do appreciate that, and I do appreciate your passion on this issue. But, you know, it's interesting, you know, that one of the first amendments that we did take up talked about oversight, and it was particularly area I asked Representative, or Mr. Eloff, sorry, I gave you a pay cut again, but, you know, talked about oversight for the low-income solar program. And I think we moved it from 90% to 65%. There is more oversight in an area for residential users of low income in their solar program than we have in all the rest of them. We'll be able to track how much it costs and how much it costs to build these particular projects for the low income. But we seem to be uninterested in tracking and knowing the cost of production for all these others. Why does it cost four times as much than it does for solar? Obviously, some of the land stuff might play a bit of it, but we don't ask for any of that information for all the other parts of this. And so I think, and it doesn't reflect into the cost of reimbursement. I think, you know, we're asking to increase the size of these programs from one to three because of the rate of return, yet the savings is not given to the ratepayer. And I would ask for a roll call.
There sure will be a roll call. Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, you'll be glad to know that I, too, have served on the board of directors of a municipal utility. Oh. See, so we talked about that earlier. That's important. And I got to tell you, see, we like to brag about these things. But munis have a real history of not only, you know, serving their communities, being in touch with their communities, but they set goals, they take steps that they need to and that their resources allow them to, and they've been meeting and exceeding the goals that they've set. So they're making great progress and oftentimes ahead of that goal that has been set. That's a big part of why I'm concerned about mandates, because mandates, I think, lead to oftentimes higher prices for the technology or the equipment or the supplies that they need to reach those mandates. And that gets in the way of their natural, I believe, predisposition to find ways, to find creative ways to do what's right. I'm a scientist and I'm an environmental professional, and I know that renewable energies have to be a part of our future. They're sustainable and they're clean, and we're going to get there. But I think the question I ask is how and how quickly. I don't want to be too quick. I have concerns about mandates and their impacts. I have concerns about things like community solar gardens and their cost. I have concerns about just cost in general and dependability, and concern that the technology isn't there yet, and what's going to happen if we put all our eggs in one basket and we find that basket's got a hole in it. I'm concerned about that. I want to be wise. And so my final thought is, my grandfather was a wise old Norwegian, and he shared all kinds of sayings with me over the years, most of which made me smile, some made me laugh. But in the case of what we're talking about today, one thing that he used to say to me was, don't jump off the cliff just because you're in a hurry to go somewhere else. And I worry about that here. I don't want us to take steps too soon to try to get somewhere that we want to be and get out ahead of technology and find impacts that we hadn't thought about, unintended impacts. Thank you.
I'll speak very briefly because we've had a lot of debate on this, but we heard from scientists in our very first hearing before this committee. We've heard from scientists across the country who've said that we have to act by 2050 and we need to cut our greenhouse gas emissions in half. We are the only country in the world that is not a member of the Paris Climate Accords. It used to be us and Syria, and then Syria got religion and got in. So that leaves it to the states to act. And it may feel like, as a state in Minnesota, we can't make a difference. But when you combine the states whose governors have committed to meeting the Paris Climate Accord goals, if you add all those states together, they would be the fifth largest economy in the world. We have three states that have already acted towards 100% clean energy goals. We, just last week, last Friday, New Mexico's governor signed a bill that is requiring them to meet 100% by 2045, so a little faster than we are. To put that in context, New Mexico right now has 75% fossil fuel energy compared to our 50%, so they're going to have an even harder time getting there. But they know the stakes, and they know how important this is. Colorado is likely to move this year. We are not alone in terms of our efforts. We won't be alone. But if we don't act, then we know what's coming. We know the impacts that are coming to our nation. And we know that in Minnesota, we heard that we are the most impacted state in terms of the temperature changes that are coming. The city of Minneapolis that I represent is the most impacted large city in terms of the temperature changes around the country. So we have a lot at stake here. And we have a bill that is going to move us very substantially in the right direction in terms of clean energy, clean transportation. We also, in terms of the standard, the 100% goal, standards can be scary, but they are also important and they also move policy. It felt scary when we adopted in the Next Generation Energy Act in 2007 a 25% standard. We didn't know how we were going to meet it. We didn't know if it was going to be affordable. Turned out it was extremely affordable and we met it 8 years early. The goal that we're setting now is a 31-year goal. I have a toddler who's two who's come on the floor with me sometimes. That toddler is going to look a lot like me by the time this goal comes up, by the time this goal comes due. We have a lot of time to get this right, but setting a goal like the governor has requested is extremely important for moving our state forward and for making sure that we are doing what science tells us to do and that we are doing everything we can to improve our economy here in Minnesota, because we know how many jobs this can create. We know that we are shipping $15 billion a year out of state right now to buy fossil fuel energy. So for all those reasons, I hope that we support this bill. I think this is the most important energy bill that we've had up in the legislature since the 2007 Next Generation Energy Act. Chair Wiginius, would you like to renew your motion?
To renew my motion, that House File 1833, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I would appreciate your support.
Chair Wiginius renews her motion that House File 1833, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll. We did. You weren't here for it, but we did. We had the DE, and then we had amendments to the DE that was adopted. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Wiginius.
Aye.
Representative Swazinski.
Oh.
Representative Acomb?
Yes.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Bierman?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
No.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Halverson? Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Long?
Yes.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Mecklen? Representative Stevenson?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No.
There being seven ayes and six nays, the motion passes, and the House File 1833 is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, members.
No further business before the committee is adjourned.